everyone, welcome to the Greater Than 11% panel show. Today is the second of our series of COVID-related panels, and today is all about food in the time of COVID. We are recording this episode from the UK on Wednesday, the 29th of April. The weather outside is pretty grim and we're entering week 7 of lockdown. We are sending a big virtual hug and lots of love to all of our listeners out there. And before we go into today's panel, I wanted to share a quote of wisdom from the brilliant philosopher and founder of the School of Life, Alain de Botton, who on another fantastic podcast called How to Fail, dismantled what he calls the hierarchy of suffering, insisting that how we feel is a fact and must be taken seriously, even if we know there are people worse off than us. Because I've heard a lot of people in the last few days, especially feeling guilty for not feeling good because they know that they're relatively lucky. And I thought it might just be reassuring for people to hear that. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome two pretty spectacular guests to this month's panel, alongside myself and the fabulous Renee. The first is Kate Frobisher, founder of Urban Pantry, in my opinion, the best brunch destination in London. And not only does she make a smashing avocado smash, she has been awarded finalist Young Hospitality Entrepreneur of the Year, Code Hospitality 30 Under 30, and in 2019, Urban Pantry won the Best Breakfast in the UK award. She is a badass boss babe who is an exceptional business owner, very active and a kind member of her community, and can be found anywhere between launching a new business, unblocking a sink, or cooking up a storm in her own kitchen. Our second guest is Ginny Sherville, one of my most favourite people in the world. Ginny is the global marketing manager for Haagen-Dazs, where she leads on all global communications and brand building campaigns. She is a Marketing Academy scholar, a Wacol Future Leaders Award winner, and started life on the highly prestigious Procter & Gamble graduate programme, having graduated from Oxford and having been editor of the university paper. Massive welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
Hello, thanks for having us.
So happy that you are here. So I'd like to kick off by asking you, Ginny, how are you today? And secondly, what has been your most creative COVID concoction so far?
I'm doing really good today, despite the rain. We had a big global team meeting today with the Haagen-Dazs community around the world, with everyone sharing what they've been up to in recent times. So that was always energising. My most creative COVID concoction has been using squid ink, hugely inspired by MasterChef, which has sadly left our screens. We decided to do some MasterChef style cooking, and you always see a squid ink tweel pop up. So we ordered some ludicrously expensive squid ink in a jar, which has given us enough squid ink to cook about 15 meals. So tomorrow night I'll be cooking squid ink risotto for the fifth time in the last fortnight.
Amazing. Does it not leave you with like a black tongue after your meals?
It does, yeah.
Does it make your poo black?
Oh, it does.
Fascinating.
And everything that it touches in the kitchen. But it's delicious and it looks pretty impressive. I'm not sure I'll ever buy a jar that expensive again of squid ink, but it's been fun.
And Kate, how are you doing? And tell us what your most creative COVID concoction has been.
I am good. I had a shower today, which is a big feat. I've been working on some deliveries, which I'm sure I'll tell you about for locals and stuff. So I did quite a lot of that today. And in terms of the COVID concoction, so I started on about day 5 doing around the world in 80 days of quarantine. So every day we go to a different country, and we've been through wild and wacky countries. But actually my favourite was the England one, because it was a sunny day and we had a picnic and I made puff pastry and I made my family sit on the floor and they were that excited about that. And I made sausage rolls, egg mayo sandwiches, but everything from scratch, and I just loved that. That was my real favorite.
Sounds fab. And Renee, what about you?
I have been quite obsessed with making multiple batches of vegan congee, which is like a rice porridge. It's a traditional Chinese dish, and it's got shitloads of ginger and garlic in it. And you know what I'm like with my immune foods, so I've been like bolstering up on that. And you have this porridge, and then you like can top it with different toppings like steamed broccoli or edamame and soy sauce and all that kind of stuff. So it's been like super comfort food but healthy as well. So yeah, I've been really enjoying that.
Sounds fabulous. And it sounds like you are all being, perhaps with the exception of Kate, who's probably always cooking up a storm in the kitchen, maybe a bit more creative with your food and what you're doing in the kitchen. And that actually was kind of shared by many of our listeners, who in our Instagram poll said that 79% of them were feeling more creative in the kitchen than usual. Before we go on to talking about kind of how people's relationship with food and cooking has changed, I just wanted to quickly mention that we are aware as a podcast that people's relationship with food isn't always being creative or positive. We know that there are also many people in the country who are just worried about having enough food to live on at the moment and who can't necessarily afford food given, you know, work that's been disrupted. So we just wanted to acknowledge that you know, we are in privileged situations as a group. And I know that like Trussell Trust and others have been doing some incredible work around getting emergency food to people. And our other greater than 11% gal, Ursi, who can't join us today, made some really valid points, and I'm sure we'll go into it later as well, just about how being at home, perhaps being a little bit more sedentary, or being in an environment where you're with family and not having so much control over your food is also bringing with it a whole host of difficulties, especially around kind of body images, people's expectations of how they should look, what they should eat, how much exercise they should do. So just wanted to preface our discussion with that a little bit. But with that, Ginny, if you don't mind me starting with you, would love to hear how you think COVID has impacted people's relationship with food and cooking at the moment, and also whether you have any ice cream specific kind of insights that you would like to share with us.
Yeah, it's been really interesting actually looking at the sales in grocery kind of across the last few weeks and across the country, and especially kind of England compared to other countries as well, because I work across the global market for Haagen-Dazs. What we saw at the beginning was that people were really prioritizing their freezer space for kind of healthy foods, frozen fruit, frozen vegetables. Because at first I thought, well, lockdown, what's that going to mean for ice cream? And the category actually went down. And it's only in the last couple of weeks really that we see people starting to switch from the panic is over of the, you know, the supermarket sweep that we were all going for, and actually coming back to needing a bit of indulgence and needing a bit of a treat now and again. And people are treating themselves in different ways. But it's been interesting to see that shopping behaviour really. Also, what I really liked is the UK has been one of the quickest countries to start shopping indulgent food again. When we look at the sales in other countries, in France and Germany and Spain and things, they prioritise the healthy stuff for a lot longer than we did. So I'm like, well done, UK. Get back to treating yourself. Excellent. The other thing I think that's been really interesting as well is looking at the media patterns that have emerged from a food perspective. So we get these reports from our different media agencies and our insights teams. And there's two interesting things that we've learned. First of all, the amount of people talking about cooking and food on social is so much higher than it has been this time last year. We're all cooking at home a lot more than normal. So it's going on to social for inspiration. It's going on to share, just seeing that peak. But also it's any time of the day, pretty much. Normally we see a peak in our social listening around mealtimes and cooking around 7 o'clock in the evening, but we're seeing that throughout the day because people's routines are kind of so out of whack, which has been interesting as well. So the rule book is sort of thrown out in terms of what we're used to, in terms of how people consume media and news media around food.
Have there been any flavours in particular that have been more or less sought after during this time? Like, are any of them like kind of mood correlated, or is that kind of my Haagen-Dazs obsession going too far at this
point? If we see a strawberry cheesecake peak in Chiswick, then we know who's buying it.
Kate, what about you?
I think obviously it's clear that it's that COVID has affected our relationship with food really, and I think for me it's because we have so little to look forward to. You know, mealtimes become this peak of your day. You look for lunch and then you've got, you know, at the end of the day everyone's finished work. Obviously a lot of people are furloughed as well, so you just have this time to think and create. And I think it's forced people to be more creative as well, because you can't get some things. I mean, most of the things you can get, I think in the beginning, as you said, we didn't know what was going to be available. We didn't know what would we be able to buy. But I think that there are still things you can't get. Some people who would normally work strictly from a recipe are now thinking, actually, I can flip from that a little bit. And I think that it's made people maybe be more confident with cooking, maybe be more open to things and open to eating different things. And I also think from my perspective, from a restaurant owner's perspective, I think people are now getting to the stage. It was all very exciting at first. And now people are a bit like, shit, I would love to go to a restaurant. And, you know, you see them on TV and I can just feel someone pouring that wine for me, you know, that love of being in a restaurant. So I also do hope that after this, when we go, you know, whenever that will be, is that people, their respect and their, I guess, admiration for restaurant staff, for the chefs who are doing it all day, every day, you know, for the waiters, and even the people you don't think about washing your dishes. I hope that people think, God, they do this all the time, you know. Hopefully we'll change as well our outlook going forward on many, many things, I guess.
And would you like to share with our listeners the little restaurant at home thing that you did for your mum? Because I think it's so lovely what you did.
Well, my mum, she's out every night. She works in central London. She goes to all these fancy great things. And just one day last week, she was quite low. You know, people have their dips on different days, I think. She was just having one. And I said, what's up? She said, I just miss restaurant. So I have a lot of time at the minute as well. So I spent last week creating like a restaurant to have on Saturday night in our front room. I had my friend make a logo for it. My boyfriend, who's French, so he put on his best like super French accent. I made him be the sommelier. I paired wines, and so we did this tasting menu. I said, right, you have to go and get dressed up. And I made her leave the house and come and knock on the door where I had like a reservations table all set up and everything. It actually felt really different. I know it's so extreme, and I probably wouldn't recommend everyone to do it, but if you do want to feel like you've done something different, like just put clothes on that aren't your pajamas, you know? Maybe sit in another room in the house that you wouldn't normally, and it really did feel like you've done something different. So I loved that. It was fun.
I love that idea, and I think people are definitely searching at the moment for ways that they can be more creative at home, both in terms of what they're cooking but also their environments. The people searching for kind of date nights or DIY self-care at home, all that kind of thing. That's been interesting. From our listeners' perspective, a lot of the comments were people saying that they did have more time at home and therefore they were able to be a bit more creative, do things that they hadn't done before, and especially trying new ingredients, which was interesting. And I think that something that I've heard a couple of people say, and if you're still able to work from home, a lot of your work is sitting down and you're on a screen, and there's something quite liberating about being in the kitchen making something with your hands, especially where the things that you might do normally with your hands that are a bit more kind of tactile being taken away, because we're obviously not allowed to go out at the moment.
Another thing that we did that was quite fun, which helped with the mood, is we were supposed to be campervanning around northern France over Easter. Obviously we couldn't, so we decided to bring France to our flat, and we cooked more frites, and we got rosé, and we just did kind of French themed food, which again, all recipes that we have never cooked before, and watched a French film and kind of themed the whole day around the French meals that we were going to make. We had crepes for breakfast and things, so that was a nice piece of escapism mixed with travel that I very much had food at the centre of it.
There's actually quite a lot of cool stuff at the moment on Google Arts and Culture, and we've been posting on our social channels kind of saying to people if they're looking for date inspiration and want to kind of admire the Eiffel Tower or take a walk down a street in Venice or explore a museum that they went to in a country that they love, then they can do that from home with Google Arts and Culture. And I know that some people who have started dating people through House Party are using that as a good date experience to do with their newfound partners. So next question is, and Renee, perhaps we can go to you to kick off this discussion, is how has lockdown impacted your particular relationship with food?
I've reflected quite a lot on this because I don't know, I seem to be in a lot more balanced perspective. So I am someone who always has to have stocked cupboard and stocked fridge. So the thought of not being able just to nip down the shop at any given moment at first was a little bit of a gut wrench for me. And I think we talked about it on the last panel discussion, is that I did go out and I stocked my freezer with, you know, frozen fruit, frozen vegetables, all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, I've just been, I was even thinking this morning, like I've run out of a few things and I'm my usual breakfast routine, I didn't have things that I needed, and I just kind of looked what I had and just thought, okay, I could put that together, I could make this. I ended up using some apples that had been in the fridge for a while, made a compote, made some pancakes, not a breakfast that I would normally make, but it was delicious, and I used what I had on me as opposed to just nipping out to the shop. So I definitely have found a lot more balance in that notion of, well, you shouldn't go out. It's for the betterment of everyone else. You know, use what you've got because you have got food. You don't need to keep topping it up. So yeah, I've kind of had the reverse, I imagine, of what some other people have been going through. I've surprised myself, to be honest.
I tend to think of you as quite creative in what you do in terms of the food that you make from our conversations anyway. So I can imagine that you're just doing that, but with perhaps fewer ingredients. Although I am still permanently intrigued by how stocked your cupboards are, because you reference it quite frequently on this podcast.
Yeah, it's a childhood trauma, which I won't go into.
Damn it, you always make me feel bad for taking the piss out of you, Renee.
Look, I'm not ashamed of having stock cupboards. I love it. It gives me such satisfaction. I'm such a weirdo on that front. But yeah, I've become a lot more relaxed with it, whereas I would have anticipated that I wouldn't have been.
Kate, how has lockdown impacted your relationship with food personally?
I kind of went a little bit full on in the first 3 weeks. I would say it was baking this, eating this cake. I've got these amazing suppliers, so we go and get croissants, you know, things actually that I wouldn't live normally like. And I think I used it as a bit of an excuse. I do try and be quite controlled, I guess, with what I eat normally, because I'm not blessed with the fastest of metabolisms. But those first 3 weeks was a real, like, cool, let's eat everything type of thing. So I think I had a bit of a realization that, like, it's still normal life, you know, it's a very abnormal version of it, but you can't just go around eating whatever you want. Well, I can't go around eating whatever I want. So that's when I decided to rein it back a bit and try and make it a bit more like normal life again. But it was nice. It was nice to have that period of, if you want to eat it, just eat it for a while, because I've not been like that for a few years now. Also, in terms of cooking, I do cook a lot, obviously, but it's not the same when you've come in from a day at work, you've been standing around all day, or equally, if there's a dinner party, if I had time to cook, you're a bit more conscious, self-conscious, if something goes wrong, because people are coming over and you want everything to be perfect. Whereas if you're cooking for the same people day in, day out, it really doesn't matter if it goes wrong. So it's made me feel more confident to try things that I wouldn't necessarily have tried, because if that meal goes wrong, then whatever, we've got another one in a few hours' time. So through that, I've learned quite a lot of new things that normally I guess I would stick to a repertoire, and now I've kind of really widened that repertoire, which I'm really happy with.
Very excited to see any additions to the Urban Pantry menu.
10 pages by the end of it.
I just really love the fact, Kate, that you just explored and allowed yourself that 3 weeks of just eating what you felt or you craved. Because I think whilst it is normal life continues in like a very strange situation, just the way that we all deal with it, you know, comes in different forms. And sometimes that of like being able to eat what you feel or what you crave, etc., without overthinking it, is actually really good for our mental health and well-being.
Yeah. I did feel that, actually. I felt for a while like I felt so unrestricted, which is really nice. You know, so many things restrict us on a day-to-day basis. You know, you've got to get up, you've got to commute, you've got to do this, that, the other, and you should do this gym class or whatever. But actually, I just felt, you know what, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to do my carnal desires, you know, eat and do very little. And then I actually wanted to get back into eating healthy as well, you know, it kind of resets you.
Yeah, I agree with that.
One of my favorite responses from the Instagram poll around how people's relationship with food had changed was from a friend of mine, Aluma, and her response was also not denying myself treats because mental health, which I loved in that same vein, because people were perhaps being a little bit kinder to themselves in the early stage. Ginny, what about you?
Mine has been a real flip in how my days go by, my weeks go by. Opposite to you, Renee, I live in a flat with absolutely nothing in the fridge normally and nothing in the cupboards, because I think I normally have maybe like one evening meal at home in my flat normally during the week. And actually by the end of the first week of lockdown, my fiance and I kind of laughed. We've only lived in our flat for about 18 months as well, I should caveat, and we said that by the first week of lockdown, I think we had more meals together in that week in our flat than we had the whole time that we've lived here, because normally we're out in, you know, doing sport or in central London, going to things and stuff. So it's been a real, obviously everyone's life is living in different ways, but from a food specific, there's been a massive change, because yeah, and if 80% of my meals are normally from restaurants and cafes and things, and now they're all at home. So that's made me feel healthier, because I'm realizing how much when you eat out all the time, lots of lovely things of butter and oil goes into everything. So cooking at home has made me feel kind of better in my body. I do really love cooking, and it's actually been so lovely being able to get to dive into the cookery books in the lucky position that I am, in the sense that I'm completely sort of independent. I don't have kids to look after. I've got my job 9 to 5 during the day, but I've got evenings where I can while away the time doing really elaborate dinners, such as the aforementioned squid ink dishes. And we kind of plan our weekends around what meal we're going to cook for dinner and take hours making it. So it's been a really lovely thing like that, but also to your point earlier, Crystal, about when you're kind of at work all day and having being able to get away from the computer and to the kitchen. I didn't realize until maybe week three why I was doing it so much during the day and while I was using my hours break to cook a chili for next week. And it's just such a switch off stress debuster for me, and I think lots of people, when you have to be focused on weighing your ingredients and whatever else. So that's been really lovely. And yeah, finally going through the recipe books that I've got in my kitchen has been nice.
Yeah, I feel you there. I feel like my relationship with food has changed quite a lot in that, like you were saying, Ginny, like I eat at home very rarely during the week. But then when I do, my relationship with food is so functional, as in it always takes less than half an hour to prepare. It's typically quite healthy because it's just about getting home, not eating too late, and kind of minimizing washing up. Actually, one thing I thought I would touch on, because as I mentioned, Ersi and I were having a separate conversation earlier about relationships with food, and I thought I would kind of talk or share my shame cycle around food for throughout the day, because as I said, I don't think these things are always positive, and definitely having some like negative thoughts at the moment. So this is my typical day and how my brain charts throughout the day. So I wake up and I decide that it's going to be a healthy day. I'm going to be healthy. By 11 o'clock, I start to get hungry because I try to do intermittent fasting and not have breakfast. At noon, I kind of have a healthy lunch and feel really dissatisfied with it. I'm like, oh, that was such a shit lunch. I have nothing exciting in my life to look forward to. Then in the middle of the afternoon, I do tend to look for a snack. I haven't got anything unhealthy in the house because we're trying to remove temptation. So at that point, I either kind of like let it pass or have something very unsatisfying from the fridge or go to the corner shop and buy something unhealthy. Like today, I went and bought some really stale fig rolls that were not good. By then 6 o'clock, I get hungry and I'm very unexcited by the prospects of what I've kind of laid out on my healthy menu for the week because I'm planning all the meals. And then I look on Instagram and then I tend to see Kate's incredible, delicious looking food that she has prepared with delicious alcohol pairings. And I feel like everyone in the entire world seems to be eating and drinking to excess. And then I'm resentful that everyone else is really skinny and I can't eat stuff and get away with it. Then at 8 o'clock, we eat our healthy dinner and I feel really underwhelmed. And then at 9 o'clock comes around to kind of dessert time. And again, there's nothing in the fridge other than occasionally like a molten frozen Cadbury's cream egg from 4 Easters ago. And then I eat that, which is too late to be having that amount of sugar anyway. And then I watch like an episode of Too Hot to Handle and decide I'm never going to eat food again because I want to look like the girls on there and have like mad underboob. And then I promise myself that tomorrow I'm going to do a really hardcore HIIT workout and go back to the calorie restriction levels that I was at pre-wedding when I looked amazing. And then the whole cycle repeats itself again. So I just thought I would share that is my current relationship with food and shame and body image at the moment.
Yeah, mine's not far off that, don't worry.
I don't know how you have a cabbage cream egg in your fridge for 4 years. I had to go buy another one today. 15p.
What?
Amazing, yeah.
Are you sure that one wasn't 4 years old as well?
So Crystal, what is your thoughts about tackling the shame?
It's a good question. I mean,
I guess tackling maybe is not the only route to working through it.
I'm definitely in a kind of daily denial process, particularly because I haven't taken off my kind of sweaty Betty comfortable trousers for about 36 days. I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not feeling the motivation to work out at the moment, which perhaps I would do if I was kind of going out. I'm still doing my daily walk. I do a 5 kilometer walk every day, but it isn't really very much. I guess it's not really getting my heart rate up. What's the formula that we talk about on behavior change? Like when the pain of not changing is greater than the pain of making the change, that's when true behavior change happens. So maybe it's like when I have to start getting dressed for work again and putting jeans on or facing the prospect of going out, maybe that will help motivate me. But finding it hard to find the motivation or the why for the change right now.
What about just kindness to yourself? Because you wouldn't think of that of any of your friends.
That's true. That is very true.
I guess food can create many triggers for many people in different ways, but I just think you've got to be super kind to yourself right now. There's no room for shame even when it creeps in.
True.
In terms of the too hot to handle people as well, I always say whenever my friends say things like that, it's their job to be attractive. Like, that's it. They don't, there's nothing else going on. They don't do anything else. Their entire job is to be viewed. And I think that I would rather choose my job or your job or anything like that over basically being a body on a camera. So whenever I look at those people, I don't look at them with envy. I look at them and just think, cool. But where, you know, where's your tapas with your mates and wine? Or, you know, where's all that?
Good approach. Much more sensible. I will continue to be honest on my journey as to where I get to, hopefully find it within myself to be kinder. Maybe my commitment next week is to try and wear a different pair of trousers, and maybe that will give me some positive reinforcement or motivation that I perhaps need.
Maybe don't watch Too Hot to Handle.
I mean, we need to talk about Too Hot to Handle in our read watch lesson. There's actually so much great stuff at the moment that I've been watching. Before we move on to the topic of Too Hot to Handle, I would love to ask our two panel guests a couple more questions on the impact of COVID on your businesses. So Kate, if you don't mind me starting with you, as a small business owner, I would love to hear about what the impact to you has been and to your staff, and also if and how you've pivoted in any other way. I'd love it if you could share some thoughts with us on that.
I had a really difficult time in the beginning, actually. It was before they said you have to close restaurants and cafes. There was about 3 days before then where they said don't go to restaurants and cafes. I was watching the news and it really struck me. I just thought, how can I stay open? You're telling people to not go to them. It was a really difficult time. And I think for me as well, 2 weeks before then, I just opened my second cafe. So it was just the timing of it all was just really... it was a lot. The first thing I did was close down the new one. Luckily, I had a rent-free period there. So that one, I just said, look, it's just easier to get that away. Carried on in Chiswick as much as I could for a few more days. And then it came to the Friday night where they said everyone has to close down. It was such a difficult day for me. That was probably my worst day in this, because at the beginning of the week, I'd gone from having two cafes and then it went down to one and then it went down to none. And then all of a sudden, I felt like my whole life for the past 4.5 years since I've been doing this, since I owned Urban Pantry, has just been like non-stop, you know, working 7 days, seven-day weeks all the time. And then I just had nothing to do with myself or nowhere to put all my energy. And I just slept for about a day. I just, you know, almost so when you can't process something, I just slept. And I had said to my staff already, you'll be paid. You know, this was before all the furlough announcements came in. And I just... you know, I love them. They've been such a huge part of the journey. So I made sure, I said, we will all be fine. So I wasn't too worried about it from that side of things. I then spoke to some of my suppliers who I've been working alongside for years. And I just said, what's happening to you guys? You know, what's going to happen? And our cheese producer, Halloumi, called Cupros Dairy, they're amazing people. And they said, basically, if people stop buying it, the farmers will stop milking the animals, the sheep and the cows that make their cheese. They won't produce any more milk until it's next year when it's the lambing season again. So if people don't buy cheese, even if this goes on for 4 weeks, we won't have any cheese for the rest of the year because they'll dry up, basically. So then I just started thinking, God, this isn't just me that I need to think about. This is so many people in this supply chain that you really don't necessarily think about on a day-to-day basis. So that's when I decided to give myself a project to help these suppliers to do food deliveries for locals. So I moved back in with my parents in Twickenham because they have a garden, which is a lot nicer than my one bedroom flat. And I just sent out a leaflet and people forwarded it on. And in the first week, I had about 40 deliveries. I would order it from our supplier, repackage, rebox it, and then send it out to them. So I felt as well, it's helpful to vulnerable people. It's keeping more people indoors. It's helping the suppliers. It's been a real win-win situation for me, actually. It keeps the cafe kind of ticking over. It just keeps everything kind of on a nice, even keel rather than going from one extreme of working so much to, God, what am I, you know, how much Too Hot to Handle can I watch in one day? And finally, I actually have been, for me, really impressed with the way that the government has handled the small business grants and everything. When they were first announced, I just, you know, you kind of think, well, yeah, you'll put this in place, but oh, am I ever going to see this money? You know, is it a tangible thing? And then everyone I know who has a small business, all the ones on the road and where their cafe is, we've all just got 25,000 into the account, you know, no strings attached. There are loans available. Luckily, the cash flow's, really fine for me, so I didn't need a loan, but I know people who've got them and they said it's been really easy. My staff have been furloughed and they're being paid. I know that's just my experience. I know there are other people who have really struggled with this, so I'm aware of that. But for me, I think it's gone almost about as good as it can go, which again, it kind of feeds in with what you're saying. I do feel a bit guilty and I feel like I should be having a bit of a worse time with it all, but I'm just carrying on really.
And I think it's such a testament to the kind of leadership that you show during this time, because I feel like there's no MBA or book or course that you could go on to prepare you as a business owner to deal with this. But the way that you specifically have responded to it in terms of adapting, like pivoting, which I know is like a really overused corporate word now, but really kind of completely changing how you're doing your business, thinking about it from a community and supplier first perspective, which is also commercially viable and kind of empathy led, is so, so amazing. And it's just, I think it just shows what a brilliant boss you are, and, you know, gives me such hope in terms of like the future of leadership when there are amazing women like you doing things like that. I think your approach and response to this has been so fantastic. A bit of fangirling here, but it's really incredible.
Amazing. Because
that you did, you could have closed and like kind of, and it would have been completely valid for you to kind of sleep for 8 weeks. But I think your first thought was like, how can I help the suppliers? How can I help my community? You know, you did that within a matter of hours. I remember watching you make up those leaflets, and I just think it's really incredible. So
super entrepreneurial and super kind as well. So lovely. So inspiring.
It really is.
Like the Jacinda Ardern of Devonshire Road.
I wish I was her. We all should be more Jacinda, I think. Everyone.
Ginny, what about you? I'd love to hear about it from the perspective of a global brand. I know that Haagen-Dazs have done so much stuff really quickly, so I'd love to hear about what it's been like being on that journey and whether you've noticed difference in the pace of which things are being done and how the ideas have started and evolved.
Our biggest market globally is China. So obviously things were kicking off a while back, sadly, in China. So as we kind of came into January and things were accelerating over there, 70% of our business in China comes from our Haagen-Dazs ice cream parlours, like the cafes that you visit. So as they were getting closed down, that was already having a massive impact. And then you've got to think about obviously the safety of the staff and all the people that work in the shops. And then as it began to kind of spread across the world and we saw, you know, it happening everywhere and having to shut the shops everywhere, that's been a really big piece. And then we also have to think about the supply chain of people going to work and getting the ice cream factory that we have in France that supplies ice cream all over the world, getting that ready and getting that still going and protecting the staff that work there. So that's been an amazing job for the guys in France who've been doing that and carrying it off and keeping the supply chain going. My job is in the brand building world of Haagen-Dazs. So we've completely, as this came to be such an important time, we've been thinking, okay, what's our role here? What can we do? Really not trying to do it in a way that will over promote products or think of ourselves as anything bigger and grander than an ice cream brand. But we thought actually what we do as an ice cream brand and as Haagen-Dazs is we try to bring a smile to people's faces. That's what we do all year round. Bring a little bit of joy, a little bit of relief, a little bit of comfort to people's lives. So then we thought, well, that's exactly what we need to be doing now, but in a different way. So instead of, you know, the events and things that we had planned for spring and summer, we thought, how else can we bring that little bit of joy into people's lives? So we had one of our creative agencies, Love, who are based in Manchester, had the amazing idea to temporarily rebrand from Haagen-Dazs to Haagen-Dazs. So we've changed kind of our logo across various different social platforms and things for Haagen-Dazs. And then we've done a couple of things. We've launched this social initiative called Ice Cream Sunday. Sunday being a play on words of obviously of the day and also the treat. So in different markets around the world, we're asking people to share how they're making exciting or indulgent or quite ridiculous creations from whatever they've got in their kitchen and sharing them with us, and, you know, user generated content across the different channels in the markets, which has been really interesting. Also as well, seeing what people have in their cupboards in Korea versus in France has been fascinating. And then in the UK, we've also done a partnership with Secret Cinema. Secret Cinema I imagine most people listening to this will know, is an immersive film event. They spoke to us a few weeks ago about joining forces on a new initiative called Secret Sofa. So this is what we're doing with them. Every Friday night, there's a film and there's a bunch of content that the Secret Sofa team put out, so you can get really immersed in the film from your home. Last Friday was Groundhog Day. Kind of live stream it all together. There's lots of content, so lots of actors. There's an after party, there's a DJ, there's competitions for the best dress. So we are matching a flavour to the film each week. Last week was Groundhog Day and Pralines and Cream. It's actually a really fun part of my week when I hear what the film is and then try and think which flavour works. So inspired by Crystal, the first film we did with Secret Sofa was Grand Budapest Hotel, which for me, as soon as I thought of it, it's kind of like pink and snowy. So I thought strawberry cheesecake, that's kind of pink and snowy. So we linked that up with them, and we have an Amazon Prime collaboration as well. So you can get the strawberry cheesecake or the flavor of the week delivered to your door in time to watch the film. And we're working with a bunch of kind of influencers and trying TikTok for the first time, because everyone is. So are we. To your question, Crystal, about how we are working differently, we're definitely working at a kind of a quicker pace, because we need to make sure that everything that we're doing is really reflecting the context of kind of the country sentiment as it is, because we saw right at the beginning about how brands advertising was a no-no, and then brands doing good and everything else. So being really agile is difficult for a big company, but we're doing it and we're learning. And I think, yeah, we're super pleased, especially with this partnership with Secret Cinema and Secret Sofa, as a way to, again, use the word pivot in these times to bring an experience into people. And it's proving really popular. And yeah, we're getting lots of good feedback. And it's also really fun. We've got a really cool extra collaboration next week. I'm not allowed to announce the film yet, but if you sign up on the, not that I'm trying to plug it, but if you sign up on the Secret Cinema Facebook page to look out for the film and the collaboration next week, it's alcohol themed and it's going to be a good one.
We will definitely share the links to that, and also, Kate, to your local deliveries as well in the post show notes. Also, Ginny, I just want to say that is so cool that part of your job right now is pairing films to ice cream. Like, that is the stuff that dreams are made of. Can you imagine being in a careers fair and going around and telling somebody that that is something that they could do and be paid for in their life? I think that's amazing.
It is fun.
I think it's also so great how creative and how quickly you've reacted to this, and also that notion of focusing on what Häagen-Dazs does, joy, and you've just completely served that up. Yes, that is a pun there, not intended.
Yeah, Ginny, are they partnerships that were kind of in the pipeline before this, or are they partnerships that kind of happened?
Some of it's new, and actually the ice cream sundae idea that, now I think about it, we should be doing all the time anyway. It was obviously triggered by people being at home and everything we've spoken about so far tonight in terms of getting creative with the cooking. We have a Häagen-Dazs chef. His whole profession is designing what we call our Häagen-Dazs creations, so the desserts that you find in the Häagen-Dazs cafes around the world. So we're getting him to design a new creation kind of each week to serve up as inspiration for people if they want to kind of copy those things. And they are delicious. They
what
are so tasty.
A job. Yeah. Again, going to a careers fair, to your point, Crystal, you can be an ice cream chef.
I'm still lobbying hard for a strawberry cheesecake and peanut butter crunch collaboration.
Buy both pints and spoon in each.
So moving on to the final segment, and often my favourite segment of our panel show, which is to ask you all, what have you been reading, watching or listening? And if you could share a recommendation with our listeners to help them get through the lockdown. Kate, would you mind starting first?
I have read for the third time my favourite book, it's one of those ones, you know, when you finish it and you start it again. It's called Setting the Table. It's by a guy called Danny Meyer, who's my absolute restaurant idol. He owns quite a few restaurants in New York, like 40 or something, and including the chain Shake Shack. And they were given a government grant actually about 2 weeks ago of 10 million, and he gave it back because he said there are other people who need this more. He's a really good guy. As a business book, I couldn't recommend anything more. That's not that interesting though, if you want to read something juicy. Watching, I'm very behind the times. I've just finished Game of Thrones. So it's one of those ones that I looked at before and I just thought, I don't possibly have the time to go through 8 series. I started actually just before all this and I've now just finished it. So That's not very revolutionary to anyone, though, because I think anyone who wants to see Game of Thrones has already seen Game of Thrones and MasterChef. But as you said, it's gone now.
I think it's a good insight that there are things that if people want to watch, go on epic watching journeys that they never felt like they had the time to. Now is the time to do that. Though I have to disagree. Like, I am a MasterChef fan, but I really didn't enjoy this series. I was really not invested in any of the contestants.
One of them looks like one of my best friends, so I just liked her because of that. Really.
Ginny, what about you? What have you been watching or reading or listening?
Reading, reading quite a lot. I've just finished a great book by Meg Wolitzer called The Interestings, which is set in New York. That sent me down a bit of a New York escapism journey. So then I watched Manhattan by Woody Allen, and I've decided to watch a bunch more Woody Allen movies this week. And then we've also been trying to watch quite a lot of classic films. Again, it makes you feel a bit more productive when you're watching a classic film and sort of ticking off a list of classic films. So I've been watching quite a lot of those. And then another thing reading-wise that I've really enjoyed is reading restaurant critics and their articles at the moment. There's a really lovely one by Grace Dent in The Guardian where she talks about what's going to happen about when lockdown is over. And she uses the kind of symbolism of Pizza Express. And she says, this is just one line for it. She says, I found myself dreaming of Pizza Express dough balls, not the food, but all that it symbolizes. It's friendship, it's silliness, and it's unplanned Friday nights. Read the article because it talks a lot more about that, which is really lovely. And it reminds me as well, I think 2 weeks ago, there was an article in The Guardian by Marina O'Loughlin, which and the headline was, my love letter to the restaurants that feed me, because obviously these restaurant critics aren't able to go out at the moment. A quote from that article is, restaurants can be shallow or profound, serious or silly, enchanting or infuriating. They can create memories that last a lifetime. Building a relationship with a favourite restaurant is like making a true friend, one whose doors are always open, ready with a welcome and the promise of a good time. They offer, in the non-secular sense, a form of a communion, because what even is a community without restaurants? And what kind of civilization isn't based on the rituals of breaking bread? Just thought they were just two really nice pieces of writing about restaurants and food and the emotion and everything that it symbolises that I really liked.
I love that. So profound. Perfectly encapsulates how I feel about Urban Pantry and other of my favourite places. And I agree, actually. I think the only thing that I've been reading at the moment has been Jay Rayner or Grace Dent. I don't know why. I have no interest in any other content apart from what they write. I just love it. Renee, what about you?
I am reading, and I've only just started the last couple of days, this really wonderful book called The Well-Gardened Mind by Sue Stewart Smith. And it's actually a nice crossover with that conversation we had earlier about using your hands to cook and distraction and being involved with something that keeps your focus maybe away from the daily grind or from the fact that we are kind of restricted at the moment. And she is a psychologist and she is exploring what gardening gives to one's mental health. And she looks at it from a neuroscience perspective, but also through her hereditary line. So her grandfather was in the First World War and he was put in a prisoner war camp and nearly died from malnutrition. And his way back to health was through gardening. And she kind of looks at that kind of situation. And then she talks about how she has explored her own love of gardening and how then that has played out with kind of clients and things like that. Like I said, it's early days of the book, but it is a really fascinating story. And for someone who is obsessed by plants and almost has a jungle in every room of her house, I'm enjoying it so, so much and really resonate that notion of, you know, the smell of earth, seeing things grow, cycles, all that kind of stuff. So that is fabulous.
Love it. Great recommendation. My recommendation is for a Netflix series called Never Have I Ever, and I binge watched it in 2 days. But it's basically a coming of age comedy about a Indian American girl teenager who basically wants to change her social status, but her kind of friends and family make that a difficult journey. And it's quite frivolous and silly. It's written by Mindy Kaling and Lang Fisher. But I love it because for me, it just resonated so much as kind of like a brown person growing up in a largely white school and society, and a lot of the kind of inherent beliefs that you grow up with, even if you don't know that it's not normal, around like work ethic and going out and all those kind of inherent cultural values that are kind of loaded on you by your parents. And I just found it really funny and heartwarming. And it also dealt with some quite powerful topics around trauma, because this isn't a big spoiler, it's in the first episode. The main character, her father dies early on, and she loses the use of her legs for 3 months in dealing with the trauma of it. But it's dealt with in such a kind of funny, sensitive way, and they have a really diverse set of characters and really strong female characters in it, and it just gave me some wonderful light relief, and I loved it. So that's my recommendation. As for books, I haven't picked up a book in ages because I've absolutely lost interest in reading completely. The only thing that I'm reading, as I said, is restaurant writers, but not much else. Can we quickly talk about Too Hot to Handle? Because I just feel like it's a really important topic that needs to be explored. Renee, have you watched any?
No, Crystal. Love is Blind was enough for me. Ursie tricked me into watching that, so I haven't. And I'm not going to watch Too Hot to Handle. They're not jobs, to use Kate's kind of analogy, they're not jobs I'm interested in.
I don't really know what it is.
Kate, would you like to share?
I've actually never watched any of these Love Islands or Love is Blind, but something about this current situation forced me to put this hideous TV show, and I watched it all in one day. And it's really made me question who I am as a person. But it is quite entertaining. There is something about watching beautiful people do very little, but it's just, I don't know what it is. But for me, it's like, I want to go where they are. They are on a beautiful beach somewhere. Kind of watching it because of that. And also something I've noticed, none of them ate a single meal. They were there for a month.
Well, they did. I think they must have got like hotel-type-esque service.
You would think that they would show like lunch and dinner time. Maybe something interesting happens over lunch.
They don't on Love Island either. Like, I think it's part of the thing. The thing is, there's something wrong with my brain, because when I watch these people, no part of my brain is like, they're not real, they've had loads of work done. I'm like, they're real, they can achieve that. Why can't I do that? Anyway, I mean, it's ridiculous premise, very cheaply made. I always manage to tell myself that watching these always gives you an interesting insight into the human psyche. Anyway, I think we've reached the end of our
Too Hot to Handle.
We've reached the end of Too Hot to Handle.
So before we wrap up, just a huge thank you to everyone that responded to our Instagram poll about food and getting creative with food and your relationship with food. It's been super helpful, and obviously you've heard Crystal reference loads of it. Just a little announcement as well, that as of May, we're going down to 2 episodes a month rather than weekly episodes. So for our regular listeners, don't be surprised when we skip a week here or there. There'll be more of that in a future episode. We'll discuss the reasons why.
And as ever, please rate our podcast on whatever platform that you're listening to it, and share it with all of your friends and family if you think they would enjoy it as well. We'd love to reach as many people as possible. And as ever, we know that this is a really difficult time for some people. So as a group, our virtual door is always open if you ever fancy having a cup of tea or sending us a message on Instagram or LinkedIn. Just get in touch, and we are here to have a chat, give you some company, discuss anything if that would be helpful. But other than that, thank you for listening. Thank you to our incredible guests, who I'm just totally in love with and so in awe of in so many different ways. And stay safe, and until next time, keep well.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.